This is the 17th day of June, 1977. Man's most spectacular era is fading into history. This is pertaining to the basic philosophy that explains modern times. Let's begin with five questions. Do you feel that your personal position of overall security is assured beyond its present standing, so you can look ahead into a future that is reasonably predictable? Are you satisfied that the affairs of government and the national economy are operating in satisfactory order? Do you find anything pertaining to your present way of life that is harassing, oppressive, or that you believe to be unfair in one way or another? Do you believe that our modern way of life is just normal to an age of rapid progress and should be accepted without questioning? Do you believe that our modern way of life represents an elevation in the level of civilization that offers more security, contentment, and happiness than ever before achieved? If your answers to these questions leaves you satisfied that all is well in your life, then the words to follow may have little meaning. But if you are not satisfied that all is well, you may find the answers you would like to know. If we believe something is not quite right and would like to do something to correct it, first, it has to be determined just what is wrong, what allowed it to get that way, or what arrangement of things causes it to be the way it is. To state this very simply, first, the truth has to be known. The truth is not necessarily something that can be assumed or taken for granted because it may be hidden in the illusions of deception. What we see and hear may be only bits and pieces of truth arranged to form an impression that is far removed from the reality. Precedent becomes important in searching for truth. If no precedent is available for reference, then it becomes very difficult to establish truth of circumstances because all things then have to be compared with known fundamental basics, bit by bit. Some things are not possible to ever know in full truth without precedent or heritage. For example, if no one had ever seen a rattlesnake but saw only the rattlers on the tip of its tail in the crevice of a rock, no one could be found that would know that the thing visible was only part of a lethal snake. So where there is no precedent or heritage of knowledge to explain an existing condition, the condition must be brought into full light so an identifiable amount of it is exposed for prospective evaluation before it becomes possible to determine just what it is. Statistical two-dimensional facts and figures do not adequately reveal the complete nature of a thing or a condition. The third dimension of depth has to be added, so what lies beneath the surface becomes known. We have become so accustomed to assuming reality from illusions that we take things for granted as being a certain way by the illusion. For example, a flat picture with good shading of light in the details gives an illusion of depth, but if the picture is turned and viewed from the edge or the backside of it, it becomes readily apparent that it was only something thin and flat without substance of depth at all. A great deal of our knowledge about modern times comes from the flat picture seen on TV, and we are likely to assume that our impression is complete, undistorted truth. The camera angles may overemphasize as well as leave things out that are important in forming an accurate impression. Mentioning these well-known things may seem trivial, but when we realize that our modern existence is built as much upon the power of deception as it is truth, then the importance of basics will come into renewed appreciation. Only through basic truths will man be able to reestablish his rightful place in God's creation and find the direction to go. He has become blinded by his own lights, shining into the dense fog around his own deception. The reasoning power of individual mind has been so thoroughly tortured that it has become desensitized to recognition of truth. The individual has become victim of a very deliberate diabolical plan to reduce him into a willing unit of human power, enslaved in servitude, under dictatorship. This is a profound accusation, which will be thoroughly explained in seven topics as follows. 1. Visible effects in our modern way and their causes. 2. Departure from a natural means of existence. 3. Alteration in government. 4. How the power of society is enslaved. 5. Alteration in the economy. 6. Deviations in education and loss of heritage. 7. Summary and conclusions. Now topic number 1. Visible effects in our modern way and their causes. When we scan the spectacle of our modern way of life, we see miracles of progress never before dreamed of. Digital wristwatches, pocket-sized radios, and electronic calculators. Monstrous machines moving earth and superhighways bearing the wheels of modern transportation, while aircraft filled with people and cargo move 5 miles above the earth at 10 miles a minute. We have sprawling high-rise cities whose lights at night outdo the glorious magnificence of the Aurora Borealis, while supertankers roam the seas to bring in oil from faraway lands to furnish the extra energy needed to make it all work. The superficial cause beneath this panorama of progress is an ever-accelerating boom in technological development, having come into its explosive rate of expansion only during the past 100 years. So all now living were born into this modern age of development and have become accustomed to the miracles of convenience it provides at the turn of a key, push of a button, or flip of a switch. There are other interwoven causes that are not visible from the surface. These hidden causes will come into light in the topics that follow. There is no precedent in all known history for our modern age because the species of man had lived for 5,000 years by other means of existence, yet from time to time had found prosperity, contentment, and happiness. So it has to be concluded that although we may not fully realize it at this time, there was some other satisfactory way to live in the natural environment of the earth. This conclusion is proven by precedent and leads into the next topic. Now, topic number 2, departure from a natural means of existence. First, let me define what is meant by natural means of existence as applied in this discussion. A natural means of existence is the state in which all that is needed for man's survival is provided in the regenerative processes of nature and in the inexhaustible natural resources, such as the land, sea, and fresh water, all within proximity of man's natural means of obtaining. Until these modern times, man had lived within the restrictions imposed by this definition, whereas our modern existence violates them all but one. It must be concluded, then, that by the definition, our modern way of life has departed from a natural means of existence. We still obtain bodily nourishment from foodstuffs produced in the regenerative processes of nature. But in the main, these are not produced within proximity of obtaining by natural means of transportation. Transportation now required to move essentials into and out of centralized processing facilities depends upon energy that is not regenerating by natural process, but is being removed from depleting deposits in the earth that are exhaustible. Lagging behind and fading out of local production of essential survival needs has shifted dependence onto long supply lines of transportation, which are not ruled out by the definition if the lines are powered by something regenerative like fuel from vegetation or from some form of energy naturally occurring, as in the wind, solar power, hydroelectric, the tides, and so forth. Sailing ships which roamed the seas for centuries did not violate natural means of obtaining, even though they represented long supply lines. The ships were built of materials that grew in nature and were powered only by the wind. To increase natural production of food to meet the needs of an increasing population, nature is being assisted by helping to arrange things in its processes to be more productive. This in itself does not violate a natural means, but the use of mechanized equipment for this purpose that runs on irreplaceable energy is in violation. The city has now become totally dependent upon transportation and the uninterrupted supply of energy for its utilities. Without transportation and utilities, the city dies in a matter of hours. Since there is not sufficient local production of all necessities for survival, those who might flee the city in time of disaster have little chance of finding within proximity of their means of travel all that would be needed to survive. Because of our total dependence upon energy, what we might do without it becomes unthinkable, but it would take only a little bit of war to bring on such unthinkable mass disaster. We have paid in billions of dollars for national security and have been told we have national security. We have been lied to. The whole scene is upside down. National security can be no more than the sum of strength in its independent, self-sufficient local communities, and no individual has greater security than does his nation. Much of the tax money we have paid in to buy national security has been spent to set up an illusion of security that does not exist. Now let's see what the spectacular progress and a departure from a natural means of existence adds up to. Well, it adds up to a trap. The most powerful man-made trap ever conceived, unprecedented in all known history. When man began to discover what he could do with the energy he found in the earth, he forgot that he was a guest in God's creation, failed to ask himself where he was, what he was, why he was, and who he was. He decided, like Adam in the Garden of Eden, to strike out on his own, to go his own way and do as he pleased. He turned loose of all the natural things that guide man's way to grab and run with new unprecedented ideas with no proof of their validity other than his own fallible logic. Man had found a way to multiply his work power and productivity many thousandfold. It was no longer necessary to be conservative with anything. Everything was replaceable easily. Use it once and then just throw it away. So during all your lifetime and mine, we, every one of us, have been enthusiastically and frantically building ourselves into a man-made trap baited with energy. Everyone now is feeding from the bait and could not survive without it. The farmer tills his soil with a tractor, pumps his water with electric or gasoline power, goes into town in his truck to get supplies shipped in by truck or diesel train. His kids go to school by bus. There are very few flaws in the trap where any light can be seen through its powerful jaws. We have done a most remarkable job. It is such a perfect job, it is a superhuman accomplishment. We could not have done it so thoroughly without help from the spirit of Satan. For about the past 60 or so years, progress has been traveling on an unprecedented, uncharted course at an ever-increasing rate of speed. Progress has projected an illusion of man's own greatness. What better illusion of his self-sufficient superiority could be projected than by his trips to the moon? I am not condemning this accomplishment, only the deceptive illusion of man's own greatness that it has cast. At one time in man's history, there were no railroads, no electric lights, no telephones, no motorized vehicles, no radio, no TV, and no airplanes, no refrigeration. Yet without these, he from time to time found contentment, happiness, and flourished in abundant prosperity in his natural existence. We may think of this as an age somewhere far, far back in the ancient history of primitive man. This seems to be the modern prevailing impression, yet we think of the United States of America as a new, modern nation that has always had most of the things named. Well, at the time the Founding Fathers declared independence of these United States from the powerful British Empire in 1776, just 200 years ago, none of the modern things named a moment ago were in existence, no, not even the railroads. In fact, of all of the things named, only the railroads were in popular usage before the year 1900. So the natural means of existence is not nearly as far away as it might seem, looking back into the past, or maybe even looking forward into the future. The technology we have developed is very valuable. There is nothing wrong with it except the way it has been used to satisfy supernatural greed for wealth and power of only a few. The technology presently known is sufficient to generate a new booming economy turned toward dismantling our man-made trap and converting what could be salvaged for use in reestablishment of a natural way of life. We have the basic know-how, but will not have the incentive as long as the trap is kept well baited and the individual initiative is willfully repressed. Now, topic number 3, deviation in government. It seems most people have the impression that as our nation has grown, all the alterations made in government have been for the purpose of strengthening the national security, improving the general welfare, and fitting the government into the needs of modern times. But really, a very proportionate few of the changes made have been for these purposes. Man has never found the perfect way to govern his society. But the government structure prepared by our founding fathers is the best that has ever been conceived thus far. They recognize the fact that man is a guest in God's creation, and that he is created individual with the divine right of choice. Their structure was prepared for government of a free society by representation of the individual preferences into a refined or distilled sum of these, bearing ascension of authority in government, to apply this sum to the society for popular satisfaction of its preferences. The structure was prepared such that government was always to be a servant of the represented will of the people, and the people could not become unrepresented servants of the will of government. The national spirit of freedom that grew out of their new structure turned out to be even greater than the letter of its documented laws implied. The new government inspired freedom of individual initiative as it has never before been inspired. Competitive individuality sprang forth into enterprise which began building a great free nation, and remember, this happened while man was still living within the limits of natural existence. Independent, competitive, free enterprise was naturally guaranteed by the government, resulting in national growth becoming the sum of free, competitive, individual differences. Yes, I said free, competitive, individual differences. It is unfortunate that some words which appeared in the Declaration of Independence have been repeated over and over again in a different light from that of their origin. These words are, quote, "and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal," unquote. These words do not appear anywhere in the documentation of our constitutional representative democratic republic. The spirit in which they are usually repeated is contrary to the documentation of our laws for a free people. People from all corners of the earth came to the new land of the free, bringing with them their differences in ideas, in talents, in heritage, and traditions. The spectacular early growth of our nation rose out of differences instead of sameness or enforced equality. The new government had provided a way for a sum of mind to contribute to national growth and to the power of a national society under free self-government. This structure of society is not controllable under the will of any one or any few. It is a sum of mind power and human force that cannot be enslaved under dictatorship. But there are always a few in the world who become possessed with the satanic greed for power to enslave their fellow beings, then use their power for increasing personal wealth, and in their conquest to gain power over and rule the whole world. There were those among us who had this satanic desire, and our powerful society had the power they wanted to use in their conquest. This called for their altering the government, and this has been accomplished a little bit at a time using the strategy of gradualism. Alterations made over a period of years are too numerous to name, but those most significant have come through legislation built around the federal income tax, the multiple benefit programs, including revenue sharing, the rights legislation, and the enactment of federal emergency authority. Through these legislative alterations, the individual citizen and local governing bodies have all been placed directly under the command of federal enforcement. The original government provided a buffer of ascending authority between the individual and local government and the federal level. The intermediate buffers are still in existence, but now federal authority bypasses or goes around these. We have lost effective representation in government at all levels and are now essentially enslaved under dictatorship at the will of a few. Topic number 4, how the power of society is enslaved. Alteration in government provided the structural framework for enslavement of society, but perhaps it is even more important to understand the basic philosophy that makes it possible to herd people like so many sheep into the confines of a federal framework. There has to exist some form of weakness in society that makes it susceptible to becoming victim of evil manipulation. I believe that by majority we are a nation of honest, good-hearted people who want to do what is right, but I believe also that by majority we suffer from ignorance, complacency, and laziness, all of which exist to more or less degree in all people, I too having not been denied my individual share. Complacency and laziness are more a matter of individual preference, but ignorance becomes more a matter of truth being made available, withheld, or willfully distorted. Nevertheless, it is through the weaknesses in society that it falls victim of attack through channels of anonymity, incredibility, and philanthropy. These are the three keys to the use of power of the masses. The authority that is able to motivate and control the human power in the masses is nothing more than an illusion of power until it becomes supported by the real power in the masses. So it is the power of the people themselves that enforces all the things they don't want upon themselves. There is no source of real power other than that within the society itself. The first key, anonymity, explains the illusion of power. The masses are kept from knowing the exact source from which they are being ordered into action. Orders come down through a chain of successive authority, so it is assumed they must originate in some office of high authority, even though the exact source remains anonymous. Furthermore, the individual does not have access to a level of authority where he can question the validity of orders. Authorities available at the level of the individual are many in number, but each holds only a small portion of the authority the individual is questioning, so it becomes impossible to trace orders back to the level of their origin. Now the second key, incredibility. Perhaps this is best understood in reference to something being incredibly large or incredibly small. It applies typically to orders which have an image of authority or magnitude of substance beyond the limits of reasonable understanding and are therefore incredible and unquestionable. For example, if it were announced by way of the communications media, for all men age 18 to 30, whose last name began with the letter A, to assemble at the nearest courthouse at 4:30 a.m. tomorrow morning by order of federal emergency authority under penalty of law, it could be expected that all but a few would be there. To question such an order would be incredible. Its authenticity would just be assumed. There are occasions, though, when incredibility is applied in the other extreme, something incredibly insignificant, such as the 16th Amendment of 1913, legalizing the federal income tax. It was kept incredibly insignificant for a few years, but now look what it is costing society. The third key is philanthropy, which serves a double purpose. There are always a few with great wealth and in high position where it is possible for them to manipulate affairs of government and economy in their favor. These, if engaged in such manipulations, invariably cover themselves with a shield of philanthropy. Philanthropy gives them an aura of goodwill, benevolence, and generosity in the public eye, and buys or bribes those who are wiser. Philanthropy is also used to force the policies of institutions receiving funds, such institutions having to comply with dictated policies to become eligible for the funding. The power of money buys conformity. It may at first seem incredible that three such simple keys could explain how the power in society is enslaved and motivated to enforce upon itself its own self-destruction. Absolutely incredible. And that is why it works. Topic number five, alteration in the economy. There could be no organized society with a government without a supporting economy. Basically, the economy consists of producing what society needs and commerce in exchanging these needs. This includes work, services, raw materials, finished products, and a variety of less tangible effects, such as insurance, speculative investments, and so on. All that goes on in the economy has some kind of value assigned to it or relative to it. To prevent economic anarchy, there has to be a standard reference for exchanging things, which is, of course, money, to bridge the path of exchanging between valuable elements as they are moving about. Without a fixed standard value for money, all other values become arbitrary and controversial. Well, in case you may have forgotten, the U.S. dollar has had no reserve backing for quite a few years now to give it a fixed reference value. Therefore, the dollar has become a commodity instead of a standard medium of exchange. Being a commodity, its value is arbitrary for lack of any fixed reference, so it is now worth different amounts at different levels in the society, in the economy, and in different marketplaces. Several things in the modern economy have turned onto a fatal course of self-destruction for a free economy, and this is just one of them. Free economy is being destroyed by corporate monopolies and by federal controls and regulations. Perhaps there is little need for particular concern about the economy, though, unless the closing jaws of our man-made trap, baited with energy, can be reversed. No amount of controlling, regulating, and force feeding here and there by pushing funds around are going to stabilize an economy that has no standard reference of value. It will continue to inflate until it ruptures and collapses. A natural economy is self-regulating because it is held together by independent, competitive, free enterprise engaged in the supply of society's demands, and it has a standard reference for monetary exchange. Independent, competitive, free enterprise has a powerful sum of mind at work, very seriously watching all that goes on because the decisions of this mind means bread and butter or no bread and butter, profit or failure. Mistakes in judgment are made, of course. Wrong turns are made. Some lose out. People are not perfect. But the sum of mind keeps things ever rebalancing, and overall security is assured. It is my personal conviction that we would never have gone this far into an artificial man-made trap, depending upon only one source alone for survival, if the national economy had stayed within the hands of independent, competitive, free enterprise. Corporate monopoly centralization of big business has forced out competitive independence and thereby destroyed the mind that is needed to guide the course of the nation within the limits of a natural means of existence. It was not through the planning of independent, competitive, free enterprise that our very survival has been switched over to a total dependence upon only one irreplaceable source that is depleting. Progress in the last half century most likely would not have been nearly so rapid or frantic, but we would not have run so far ahead that all assurance of survival was left behind. Independent, competitive, free enterprise does not operate with an overall high level of greed, because the greed that develops in it soon self-destructs. It has no manipulated source of self-regenerating wealth to keep it going, like the corporate monopolies have discovered.